What do you want me?
Jerky, is that your last name?
Jerdy.
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 Okay, this is Barry Tyker. I'm with Alice Jerdy, who was Alice Christensen when she was a student here at UW. It's June 7th, 1984, and I'm interviewing her in the popover room at the union. Mrs. Jerdy, when and where did you graduate from high school?
I graduated from Deerfield High School in 1928.
And what made you decide to attend college?
Because it is a family tradition. My aunts and my uncle had all gone further to school, Whitewater Normal, and one aunt in the music department at Wisconsin.
Which colleges did you consider?
Well, my freshman year was spent at Carroll College.
Oh, it was.
Because they thought from a small high school I should go to a smaller school before I came to Wisconsin.
But the plan was to come to Wisconsin.
Oh, yes, because Carroll College did not have home economics. And they did not have a school of nursing. I had planned to take the 5-year nursing course, but because of a hearing problem, they would not let me continue.
You said you had made the decision to go into home economics already?
If I could not get into the nursing school.
When did you make that decision and why?
Oh, I always wanted to be a nurse because I had been in the hospital when I was in 8th grade, and I guess I just liked...
What about home ec?
Well, I just thought that would be something I would like because I would be... I was majoring in textiles. I didn't know whether I had not planned on teaching at the time, and I thought with the textiles I might go into store work or buying or something like that.
So you entered UW in your sophomore year. That would be what year?
1929.
Did you have a career goal in mind then before entering UW?
Nursing.
Nursing. Mm-hmm. And then
home ec was my second choice.
In your freshman and sophomore years, were your courses, or your sophomore year, I guess, were your courses primarily taught by instructors or professors, do you recall?
Both.
Did you have large classes, many large classes?
Well, in the social sciences, the classes were large. Like I had in economics, I had economics over at Music Hall, and I was in economic class when the crash came. And I remember, can you give his name now? The professor telling about the crash and that times were very serious. And at that time, the boys had to sit on one side and the girls had to sit on the other. And one day, a girl sat on the boys' side. And Professor Kiekhofer said, stopped in the middle of his lecture, and he said, "What are you doing over there?" Because the girl was supposed to sit on the girl's side, not the boy's side.
What did the girl do?
She stayed there until the end of the class.
Then did she move back?
The lecture, yes.
Was that common in all of your classes?
No. But he was famous for that. He had the boys on one side and the girls on the other. Uh-huh.
And he explained that the first day?
Yes.
Do you happen to remember why he said he did that?
No, I don't know why.
Okay. How did women students generally dress for class back in the day?
Oh, we wore dresses and we froze to death going up and down the hill. I surely wish they'd had slacks in those days. They wore dresses and we were dressed up. We wore sweaters and skirts.
Mm-hmm. Did you wear makeup and jewelry much?
Oh, we wore lipstick, not too much jewelry. And part of the time I had long hair.
Ah.
And then I wore, like they do today, I just wore it different ways. Mm-hmm. And then I had it bobbed.
And that was pretty much the style of time.
Some wore bobbed hair, some wore it long. Yeah.
What about boys? How do they normally dress?
Oh, they were really, they wore shirts and trousers and sweaters a lot.
Did they wear ties much?
Oh, yes.
What about sport coats?
Some.
So it was sort of a little more formal than...
It was much more formal than today, yes. Much more formal.
And what about the men's hair? Was it
Oh, They were short. Mm-hmm. And I went with an engineer, and he sported a mustache for a while. And then all of a sudden, I was looking for him, and I couldn't find him. And I looked, and he had taken the mustache off. Mm-hmm. But they didn't wear beards, and they didn't wear their hair long. But some of them had mustaches. We called them cookie dusters.
Yes, I have heard that term. Not for a while, but I've heard it. Yes, and at any time, if you remember terms that were used like that, be sure to throw them in.
All right. Well, we used to call them cookie dusters.
For the bobbing haircut or anything like that, let me know. In class, were there ever any discipline problems, misbehavior problems?
No. I think we had a great deal of respect. Well, the only thing is, if the professor was late, we could walk out.
Mm-hmm. How late could he be?
10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Did many professors get skyrockets?
Some.
Did Keekover get many?
Yes. You mean where they?
Yeah. Right.
And then there was Professor Otto. And then there was a history professor, but I can't think of his name now.
With the red vest? How important were grades to you?
How important were what?
Grades.
Grades? Well, they were important enough that I wanted to make a B average so I could get into graduate school.
Oh, is that what the requirements were?
You had to have a B average at that time to get into graduate school.
Now, did you have a major professor or an advisor?
Yes, I had Professor Hazel Manning was my advisor.
Okay, we'll talk about her in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So she would be the one who would be responsible for letting you know what your requirements were.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On your final exams, when you took final exams, were they proctored?
They were proctored. And now, I particularly remember in physics, they had the lab assistant. Mm-hmm. Do the proctoring, and they also did the correcting of the exams. And at that time, when I was a senior, I took physics when I was a senior. I was going with a fellow that was getting his doctorate in physics. And I met him on a date that night, and he said, "Well, I went through your test today. I'm the one that went through to see what was right and what was wrong." And I thought, "Oh, no, really." But I had passed it.
Was a senior thesis required for graduation?
That was up to you. But I wrote a senior thesis on the history of the Bunad, B-U-N-A-D, which is all the different costumes in Norway according to the geographical divisions, like Telemarken and Hardanger, and so on. And I painted pictures of the costume, the national costume, and had them in my book. And then I showed how the history of the country affected the different costumes. And these costumes today are worn like for weddings and so on.
Let's clarify that first point. Was it a requirement, a senior thesis? Or was it optional? Do you recall?
Well, it was. You could have a thesis that nobody else had ever written on, or you could have a topical, mm-hmm. and it gave 4 credits.
Okay, I see.
More or less, yeah. But mine wasn't a research. It didn't involve as much research as, say, in dietetics or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But it was, okay. Now, we've talked some before the tape about some of your professors in home ec. Before we get into the professors per se, let's talk about home ec in general. Was it a very common major for people?
Well, no, not particularly common. And at that time, we had to take all the sciences. I have a major in science simply because physics and bacteriology and many chemistry class courses and physiology under Dr. Meek, mm-hmm. all of that was required, which is not required today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to have 15 credits of a language. But Miss Manning allowed me to drop French simply because of my hearing problem.
So you hadn't.
So I had 10 credits in French, and then I didn't take the other 5 credits because I had a hard time understanding the person when they talked.
Were there any men who were majors in home ec?
Not when I was in school.
What role did home ec play in the education of women?
Well, they would either go in for dietetics, to be dieticians in the hospital, in teaching for high school or grade school, for working in stores as buyers, or going into the textile field. Now, I graduated in textiles, and at that time, I was offered a choice of going into working for DuPont when plastics first came out. But they charged $1,800, and I was in debt already, so I said, forget it.
Who charged you? DuPont?
DuPont wanted us to come there and take courses.
Okay.
But they charged $1,800. Yeah. This was 1932. But I'd have been wealthy maybe if I'd done it, because they wanted us to work in research for plastics, for clothing, plastics, anything that had to do with home ergonomics, maybe dishes, or I don't know what.
Okay, that's academically. Now let's talk about socially. What role was home ec kind of a gathering place, a social center for women in the university?
Not particularly. We used to have, we had the Ormaconew, and then we had another social sorority. I didn't belong, but anyway, I used to go to a lot of the social thing. But then we used to have the ag school and the home ec school. Used to have lots of parties together.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because ag was mainly men, wasn't it?
Yes.
So that was more a social as well.
Yes, so then, like, we'd have dances up here in the Great Hall.
Mm-hmm.
The ag students and the home ec students would. We didn't come with the days. We came.
So you can say that the ag and the home ec people were sort of closer
than you
might have been with the law people,
yes,
for example.
Because home ec was under the School of Agriculture at that time.
Okay, you talked about some of your teachers before. Why don't, before this interview started, why don't we begin with a discussion of Hazel Manning?
Hazel Manning was the textile, and she was the head of the clothing department. She was very English, and folks had come from England, and she would go back to England, and she wore, what do you call them, those glasses that pinched on the nose, pinched knees? She was also Episcopalian, and one of her favorite sayings about Episcopalians was that there were three kinds. There was the low and the lazy, the medium and the hazy, and the high and the crazy. That was one of her favorite stories about the Episcopalians. She loved history, and she taught history of costume. And if you majored in textiles, you were required to take it. And what we did for our lab, we made a historical doll. And those dolls are now over in the historical library. I made a Gibson girl doll with the leg of mutton sleeves, and she had blonde hair.
What's a Gibson girl?
Oh, they had the hair like this, and a short waist type of dress with a long skirt and big leg of mutton sleeves. It was called a Gibson girl because Gibson used to paint them. He was an artist, and it was always called the Gibson girl. So I made the Gibson girl doll, and it's over in the historical library. And then she was a very warm person. And she did everything she could for her students.
I think she was popular among
students. Oh, she was very popular. And nobody was afraid of her like we were Miss Marlott.
Yeah, we'll talk about her in a minute. I enjoyed your sketch of her that you wrote for me. How was Hazel Manning as a teacher?
Excellent.
What was her, she taught history of textiles. What else did she teach you?
She taught history of clothing and advanced textiles.
Was it a lecture class or was it?
Yeah, a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Were.
And with the history of clothing, we made the dolls.
Oh, okay.
See? Uh-huh. But not. But we made them kind of on our own. I mean, we had time that we could do it.
In home ec, how much of your education was hands-on and how much was theory and lecture?
Oh, in home economics, I would say 50-50. Because in foods, we had labs, and textile chemistry, we had lab, and food chemistry, we had lab. And then our clothing classes, like beginning clothing, second clothing, and then tailoring, they were all labs. With probably 1 or 2 days a week for lecture.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
I would say at least 50% was lab. And then 50% was
lecture. Okay,
lectures.
Why don't you go to the next teacher that we have listed?
The next teacher is Professor Marion Juaire, J-U-A-I-R-E. She was very French. She wasn't born in France, but she was very French. And had gone to France to study some. And she taught clothing and tailoring. And she was a perfectionist. She would make you rip out a seam, I don't know how many times, it just had to fit right.
Mm-hmm.
And we all loved her very much. And she had, well, her classes were mostly lab classes.
Mm-hmm.
But she was famous for her tailoring classes. And she had that French air about her. And she wore her clothes just like a French person. When I was in France, I couldn't help but think of them.
And by a lab, in this case, you mean like seamstress?
Sewing, cutting and sewing.
Okay.
And then we had to make a dress. We had to make a dress for somebody else, so we'd learn how to sew for somebody else.
How many people would be in a class like that?
I would say 20 at the most. Then another thing, during the Depression, we had to make over. We had to take something and make over. We could add a little new, like for a collar or cuffs or something, but we had to make over something. That was one of the projects that we had to do.
Okay. Yeah,
well, now, I wrote about Miss Marlotte.
Miss Marlotte. What about Cecilia Adley?
She taught us, yeah. I had her for textile chemistry, and she was another perfectionist. And in I often have thought about all the things that the girls have to know now, because at that time, it was cotton and wool and linen, and a little bit of rayon was coming on the market. But all the things that we have today were just, have you read anything about that? See, we did not have the synthetic fabrics that you have today. Just the beginning.
Did you have Bessie Tyrell?
Yes. She was my first clothing teacher.
Tell me a little bit about her.
Well, she always said to me, don't you put those pins in your mouth. But she was an elegant dresser, and she was very, very warm. I had her my first year of clothing.
And one other name that might overlap your time here is Mrs. Julia Noster.
Well, I knew her, but I never had her.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it on there. Helen Kramer.
She was the one that was over in the home economics, and they had the home economics cottage where you had to stay there for a whole week, and living in the house. Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But
then I had Helen Daw for child development, and she was very, very, she made you work like everything.
Was that an academic class, basically?
No, it was child development. It was part of home economics then. We all had to take it. Huh. I see Portia Glindemann. She graduated with me.
She must have come back and taught it later.
Mm-hmm. Dorothy Hoosman was my lab assistant in foods.
What did a lab assistant do?
Well, everything that she took over if the professor wasn't there, and kind of helped you find things and put out the things that you'd need for your experiments or whatever it was.
What kind of give me an example of the word experiment there. Give me an example of some experiments that you might have done.
Well, trying out new recipes, for example. In combination.
Did you try them out? Would you make them up yourselves, or would you find them in different places, or how would you?
Well, we'd try them out ourselves. Or if we had some pet family recipes, sometimes they'd let us try them out. Or Stella Patton. She was my food professor, and she was a grandmotherly type, and she was just as roly-poly as she could be, and she was. Oh, just, we all loved her.
Very popular.
Very popular, yeah.
Clothing?
No, food. And then I had Mae Reynolds. She taught dietetics.
She was here for a long time.
Yeah, she's still living.
Got her right at the end of her career, or beginning of her career.
Yeah.
Well, how was she as a teacher back then?
Well, tops. No monkey business there. I mean, she was
the
professor.
Much true of the whole school?
Lots of them, yeah. Then I had Francis Roberts for housing and interior decorating. And she was quite new. She was real young. And I can't remember anything particularly outstanding about her. And then I had Frances Duo when I did my master's work, and she was top, too.
Tell me a little bit, in your own words, about Abby Marlatt.
Well, Abby Marlatt, as I wrote, everybody had to have a conference with her, and we shook in our boots, you might say. And I went in because, and I thought, oh dear, and she had a paper that I had written on heredity versus environment, and she liked it, and she said, I want you to take journalism. I want you to come back next year and take home economic journalism. And I said, can't do it. I just can't do it. And she said, oh, I want you to keep writing. She said, I don't want you to ever drop writing. She said, I want you to keep writing. Well, then you get to teaching, and you get married, and so on and so forth. So now when I retired, I've been writing quite a bit.
That's nice.
Look
back on that.
Yeah.
So she was more or less a feared, kind of a belovingly feared figure?
Yes. I had another teacher, and I can't find her name. And she lived with the...
I have one more quote. This is related art.
Oh, yeah, Mrs. Leindorf. Mrs. Leindorf was my art teacher, and I had more classes under her when I was working on my master's.
What do you mean by art? You mean drawing type art?
No, well, yeah, somewhat, but we did. Now for her, I did a lot of textile painting. See. And then I did an advanced course in her in house planning, making house plans. And but she was real jolly and good-natured. We liked her very much. I never had the opportunity of having Helen Allen, but Mrs. Leindorf worked with Professor Allen a lot.
What do you know about Helen Allen?
About who?
What do you know about Helen Allen? What can you tell me, even though you never had her? What was her reputation like?
Well, she had the biggest collection of fabrics from everywhere. And way back in history, she had the biggest collection. And so one day I asked her, I had some Norwegian hardanger work. Hardanger is an art that they do in that part of Norway. And I gave her two big... We had used them as curtains, and then we just didn't want that kind. But what they did, they sewed them together, and they always had a smorgasbord at the home ec department, and they used those two curtains that were sewed together on the smorgasbord table.
Well, now, what do you mean they always had a smorgasbord at the home ec?
Well, once a year, a smorgasbord, a Scandinavian smorgasbord.
With
Scandinavian food.
Was there a heavy representation of Scandinavians in the Comac department? Or?
Well, no, well, some. Now, Mrs. Leindorf was Norwegian. Uh-huh. Leindorf isn't a Norwegian name, but she was Norwegian. Mm-hmm. And they just had it.
Because, okay. Mm-hmm. I just thought maybe that was
something. Then I had, find her name. She taught housing too. Cole, May Cole. And she was a very mannish type of person, May Cole. And very, very strict. Very, very, it was very difficult to get a mark from her.
Mm-hmm.
I worked like I don't know what to get. I had to get a B for my master's.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, you had her for your
I think underneath you had, now she entertained her class at her home, and then she was an entirely different person in her home than she was in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But she was very mannish and very, well, she looked hard. She really wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Were there any
thin, scrawny?
You've answered this question probably over the course of the last 5 minutes, but were there any teachers that all of the undergraduates wanted to have as teachers?
Oh, I would say we all wanted Miss Duer, and we all wanted Miss Manning.
Okay.
And
Well, yeah, it's just the ones that hit you the strongest, right? Well, what about, were there any teachers that you tried to avoid to take other teachers?
Helen, Miss Coles. When I came back for my master's, I took none of her classes. She's dead now, so I can say
it. Let's talk about advanced degrees for a moment. When you were an undergraduate, was there a master's program in home ec?
Yes.
What about a PhD program?
I seems to me not Professor Neff, Professor Neff, you asked me about her.
Yeah, over here.
With N.
She
got her, when I got mine, seems to me that she got her PhD in 1932.
She was an instructor
yeah.
in that time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But she got her PhD.
And when you came back later, there definitely were PhD students?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Was it a very big program, do you recall?
No. Mm-hmm.
What about the master's program?
Not too many. We were too poor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you had your 2 week stay at your house where you had to live and take care of it. What is that called where you had to live for 2 weeks?
Well, we called it the practice cottage.
The practice cottage, okay. Tell me about that.
We would draw straws as to what day we would be cooked. We had a cook breakfast, noon meal, and the evening meal. And I drew the foreign day. So, of course, being Norwegian, I had the Norwegian food. And Miss Mylott always came over at noon with a very critical eye. And I had made a Norwegian herring salad, and I had put some eggs in, and I had red cabbage, and the egg whites turned red. And she asked me, how did you color those eggs? And I said, when I put them in, they were white. When I came back now, they were red. So I said, it must have been something in the red cabbage. I said, I did not dye them. But she was very, very particular. And I wore a Norwegian costume for that luncheon. And so she commented on my Norwegian costume. Did I know anything about the origin of the costume? I said part of it was my grandmother's, and the rest was borrowed. But we were all shaking.
So that luncheon was sort of like an exam in a way.
Yes.
Even though you weren't graded.
Then in the evening, then we had to have a guest of honor. So I had Professor Julius Olson, you know, Never Rains on Olson, and his wife. And of course, he tried talking to me in Norwegian. Well, I didn't know too much Norwegian. And I took French when I should have taken Norwegian. He said, you should have been in my Norwegian class. Well, I said, I know I should have. It would have been a lot easier than French. But he was very jolly, and then...
Did you know Professor Olson then, somehow?
Well, I knew him, you know, a little bit.
Was he your guest?
He was my guest at the dinner, he and his wife.
You just wrote him an invitation?
Yeah, I just wrote him. We all had to have a guest, so I thought, well, I might as well have a Norwegian, Norwegian food.
Were most of the guests professors?
Yes.
That must have been a nice way to get to know.
Yes, it was,
And
then we had to redecorate the whole place. If we didn't like the furniture, the way the furniture arrangement was, we changed it. And then Miss Marlotte would say, now why do you have that chair there? Or why do you have that Davenport there? Well, balance, so on.
Oh, so you had to be able to explain all of that.
Then we had one day where we had the economy meal. We had to serve food that day for $1 a person. Now they don't even have the practice cottage.
When did that stop, you know?
Well, I imagine it's that, I think around 1955 or so. I'm not sure.
Still going when you came back for your master's?
Yes.
Under pretty much the same
principle? Yes.
Or undergraduate?
Yes.
Did graduate students use it?
Well, no, I don't. I didn't. Okay. Only the only thing I did when I was a graduate student was go over there for teas.
Talk about the difference between the undergraduate and graduate.
You had more selection, and you were, I think the professors had a little more respect for you as a graduate student. They expected more from you, too, but, I mean, you were, you felt more, you didn't feel the distance between the professor and yourself when you're a graduate student.
What about the types of classes? Did you say that there were more or fewer lectures, more or fewer labs when you were a grad student? How did that differ?
Fewer labs. Very. I can't remember that I had any labs.
So it was all more lectures.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say maybe more theoretical?
The only thing that would correspond like a lab was going over to the child development house and observing children.
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't have any labs. We had field trips and such types of things. For example, Miss Leindorf took us to Frank Lloyd Wright's place over there for architect. I took architecture under her, yeah.
Leaving home next for a minute.
Yes.
What was your favorite class outside of your area of specialization? Outside of home ec as an undergraduate?
Oh.
Is there any class or are there any classes that stand out in mind?
I was very fond. I liked anthropology. I had Professor Linton, and he used to talk about, you know, all these African tribes and how different. He looked like an ape. He had the longest arms I have ever seen on anybody, and when he walked, he had kind of a, you know, like that. But everybody liked him. We just loved him. And I liked anthropology very, very much. And then I liked, the only course in education that I liked was educational psych. I can't think of a name now.
You're going to tell me about Professor Welling.
Oh, well, that was a dollar subject. Professor Welling taught, Professor Welling taught history of education. It came 1:30 in the afternoon. And by Friday afternoon, you were sitting like this. And so that evening I went to a dance at the Union where the boys are outside and the girls in the middle, and you stopped, and this fellow said, well, how was your afternoon? Oh, it's terrible, just terrible. I said, I have history of education. And I said, that's an awful time. I said, I can't stay awake. And I said, but the professor is very handsome. And he laughed, and he laughed, and he laughed. And I said, what is so funny? He said, I'm Professor Willing's son. And I said, oh, there goes my grade. I said, what am I going to do? I said, oh, I said, that shouldn't happen to me. And so then the next Monday morning, I said to my girlfriend, I don't hardly dare go to class. So he came by and he said, well, I hear you think I'm handsome. And I thought, I'm glad I said something, guys. And he said, don't worry about your grades. He said, I haven't got such a bang out or anything in a long time. So I tell you, I was just petrified.
Oh,
but his son just, I bet you he has his father.
Yeah. When you were a student here, where did you live? What kind of house?
When I was a senior, I lived in a private home down on Brook Street.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live at the South Point?
I lived in a private home.
Oh, okay.
But when I worked for my master's, I worked for professors. I worked for my board and room when I went back for my master's. I worked for, how could I forget him? He was in the music department. He was a choir director over at Congregational Church. He had the WHA program on the air. But anyway, I worked for him. I can't think of it.
When you lived in a private home, did you do anything for room and board then?
No. I worked summers. I worked summers to earn money. I worked for the... I went around in the summertime with the State Department as an assistant to a doctor. We went around to all these child clinics all over the state, and then I showed women how to make layettes. And I cut patterns, and they cut patterns, and I told them how they could do it. It's just a depression, you know, how they could do it the most reasonable. And my expenses were paid, and I earned about $500, and that paid a lot of my expenses for school.
Now, when you lived in a private home, did you live with a family?
No. We were 20 girls in this house.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you have a landlady or an overseer?
Yeah, she was the one that owned the house.
Yeah.
And she was very nice. Then we always had a student representative on the student council from each house. Yeah. And then in our junior and senior year, if we had a be average, in our junior year, we could get one extra late night. And when we were seniors, we could get 2 12:30 nights. Mm-hmm. There was no living with boys at that time, you know.
And you had hours.
We had hours.
Yeah.
We had hours. It was...
Now, did she set them or did the school set them?
The school.
The school set
them. Mm-hmm.
You had to be in at what time during the week?
During the week, at 10:30.
And
12:30. And then if it was prom night, it was 2:30.
Mm-hmm. Where did you eat?
I ate at the Union all the time.
At the Union, so
mostly.
It wasn't a board place?
No, just room. Uh-huh.
And did you have your own bedroom?
Well, sometimes I had a roommate, and then sometimes I had a roommate.
Okay.
But my senior year, I wanted a room alone.
What condition was the house in?
Fine. Very, very. And we had lovely furniture. But we furnished our own bedding. Not the mattress, but like our pillow and bedding, we furnished.
Did you get to become, did you get close with your roommates?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I still correspond with people that I lived with.
So you may have been closer to them than you would might be to home ec people. You might spend more
Well,
time.
It happened to several home ec people at my house. And then, you know, in those days, we didn't date steady. I went with a fellow, more or less, but, I mean, we played the field in those days. Nobody thought anything about it. Nowadays, they don't do that. I mean, I could go to a dance with one fellow on Friday night, another fellow on Saturday night, and another fellow on Sunday night. I mean, nobody thought anything of it.
Were there any house rules there besides ours?
No, we were supposed to keep our rooms clean.
So you might get... reprimanded
I mean, they she cleaned the rooms, but I mean, we shouldn't have everything laying around.
How much time did you spend in the Union?
Time with
in
what?
The Union. How much time did you spend
in
the building?
Oh, I bet you an hour and a half to 2 hours a day.
That much?
I did. Mm-hmm.
What did you do here?
Because I ate my meals here, and we met people here, and we'd go in the lounge and study together, and...
Was this a common hangout then?
Yeah.
Were there a lot of home ec women who came out here?
Some, mm-hmm.
But just more or less the general...
Yeah, mm-hmm. You see, it wasn't empty like it is today.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was damn full of people.
About 2 weeks, so
oh, yeah, uh-huh.
What were the prevailing student attitudes about alcohol?
It was prohibition.
Prohibition.
It was prohibition. No, I mean, maybe I never went with anybody that drank.
The only
time that we ever drank was, well, I went with a fellow that was like New Year's Eve in his home. But no, we didn't drink. We didn't smoke either. The boys did some, but not to. We go up and smoke. In fact, I don't know if that was a rule in the house or not, but I can't remember. But nobody smoked in our house.
Did you? What made the spectator sports? Did you go to?
What made what?
Spectator sports. Football, basketball.
Oh.
Did you go to
any? Oh yeah, basketball and football. I had a boyfriend that explained everything about football. I love football today. And I had something down I wanted to talk about. I can remember living on Brookdale, University Avenue, and then we'd walk after the band went by down to the, you know, after the band went by, and they went down University Avenue to the football field, then we'd walk. But all that, sitting there and seeing the Capitol and all the views and the music and the varsity, and, oh, I just loved it. And, anyways, that was my football day.
Yeah,
and afterwards, we'd go out and eat, and then we'd always go to a dance. We had Esther Beach, and we had Chanticleer, and all these places outside of town.
For dances?
Yeah, And then sometimes they had dances here, too, of course.
Did you get involved in intramural sports at all?
No. I'm not the athletic type. Was not the athletic type. We had to have. I had tennis and I had volleyball, but that was required.
Okay, how was your education financed?
My education?
How was your undergraduate education financed?
Well, I worked part time and then I, my family.
Did you receive any loans or scholarships?
No. Okay. They didn't have scholarships then, like now.
What about the role, what role did religion play in your campus?
Oh, well, I used to go to the Congregational Church, and they had, all the different churches had dances, most of them. Newman Club had dance, and Congregational had dance. I met a lot of fellows at the Congregational.
You weren't a member of the Newman Club or anything?
No.
Okay. How did your campus religious practices compare with your pre-campus religious practices? Did you go as often?
Oh, well, I went to church. I lived in a small town where they only had Lutheran churches, so when I was here, I went to Presbyterian and Congregational.
Also,
well,
you sort of
flitted around, yeah.
Were you in any student clubs or organizations?
I was in the Home Ec Club, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about what you did there.
Oh, I can't remember too much about it. We had picnics and we had potlucks and We'd get together.
Was it mainly just a social organization?
Yeah, it was social.
Discuss your involvement in or opinion of student government. Did you know anything about it? The WSPA?
Well, I belonged. I was a House representative.
Oh, you were? Oh,
but, and I guess they gave a. I don't remember what they did talk about. I must not have been too impressed.
Were you aware of communist or other radical organizations on campus?
Not particularly.
Did you belong to any honor or honorary
school? No.
Comment on the Daily Cardinal.
Oh. Well, they used to have, the Daily Cardinal used to be the object of a lot of criticism at that time, but I always enjoyed it. And I know the fellow that was the head of the Cardinal, and I see by the Alumni magazine, he just recently died. He was a Jewish fellow, but brilliant. And we enjoyed the Cardinal.
You said there was a lot of criticism. What was the criticism?
Well, they'd have articles. Maybe they were communist articles at that time.
Or at least not.
Not right out and out. But one of the things that was discussed a lot was the. What do you call that, where they train for the army?
Oh, ROTC.
Yeah, ROTC. They had it, but it was one thing that they talked a lot about.
That the Cardinal talked about?
Uh-huh.
And they were opposed to it or in favor of it? Or?
They had both sides.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What about the Badger? Do you remember anything
about that? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Was that something pretty much everybody got?
Well, we all got that. I still have my Badger.
Do you remember Octopus or any of the other publications?
I remember, but I don't remember receiving it.
The Dean of Women. Did you ever have any encounters with Dean with the class?
Yes, when I was a sophomore, I had to see the sophomore Dean of Women because I had low grade in French.
What happened?
Well, she told me I should get busy on French, and I said I can't hear. And so then, you see, after that, I flunked French that first semester. And then Miss Manning said, no more French.
Who's the sophomore dean of women?
She was very nice.
If you were having bad grades, you would be called into the dean's office.
Yeah, we are. If we had bad grades, they want to know why.
Now, you were here during Glenn Frank's presidency.
Yes.
Is there anything you can tell me about?
Yes, when we graduated, in his address to the graduates, he said, I have no hope for you this year. He said, some of you will be very lucky enough to get jobs, but he said, most of you will not have jobs. It was the height of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very well liked. He was brilliant.
Did you hear him often?
Well, yeah, well, several times.
What appealed to you about him?
His frankness. He was out. He said, he told it as it was. That was my feeling. Well, remember, that's 50-some years ago.
Well, of course.
Yeah, but I do. But I always remember that when he said that he didn't have much hope for us in his graduation address because they weren't jobs.
Discuss the library. Do you know much about the library?
You mean the university library? Well, I'll tell you, we had the home ec library and we had the medical library for a lot of things. It was all right.
Nothing particularly.
I mean, I thought it was a very fine library.
Did
yeah.
you do most of your studying in the home ec library?
No. The Union.
Union.
And the Union had a library.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about State Street for a few moments.
About what?
State Street,
oh.
Describe the places where you ate, drank, shopped,
all the chocolate shop. The chocolate shop was the place, and they had the most wonderful food, and they had the most wonderful chocolate. And I learned a lot of tricks in home economics. They'd serve tomato soup, or they'd serve split pea soup with a daub of whipped cream on it. But that was the thing. That was the place where...
Was it a sit-down place?
Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. And then we ate at Rennebaum's, and then we ate at... there was a Spanish place right up about two blocks from the square on the left-hand side. As you went up to the square, there was a Spanish place that had Spanish food. And the decor was Spanish, and we used to like to go there.
Mm-hmm. What about the merchants of State Street, the students? How did they get along?
As far as I remember, fine.
What about police and students?
Police?
Police, yeah. City police.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, let's talk about some of these questions are a little more relevant to other periods.
That's right.
I think. Describe prevailing campus attitudes toward, I'll do the whole question, then we'll talk about that, toward women, Jews, blacks, other racial minorities, out-of-state students, and foreign students.
Mm-hmm.
I'll finish the question, then we'll go over it one at a time. Did you ever witness or were you ever aware of discrimination against any of the above groups? Let's start out with
Well,
women.
I would say that most of these houses where had houses for girls, we had two Jews at our place, never any discrimination. But I'm not so sure whether she would have had blacks. I'm not so sure. Then we had the International Club, and of course everybody mixed there.
What about women? As a woman at the university, did you ever feel like you were discriminated against or held out?
No,
okay.
Never.
What about student attitudes toward out-of-state students?
Was there any effort?
I never, no.
About,
no, I never, never.
And you, as you just said, you didn't witness anything against Jews in your house. What about Jews on campus in general? Was there any problem there?
No, nothing in particular. I went with a Jewish boy off and on once in a while, and nobody ever said anything about it. Because I'm very open-minded. I was brought up that way.
Yeah, that's a big difference. What were your career goals when you graduated from UW?
With my bachelor's?
Yeah.
Well,
as President Frank was telling you, there was no hope for a job.
And that first year, I stayed at home and boarded the teachers. And I made up my mind, well, then I can't get anything in textiles. So then I went back and took my finished education courses so I could teach.
And did you, so you did teach after that?
Then I taught, and then I went out to South Dakota for my first year of teaching. I was a rookie teacher.
Where were you in South Dakota?
I was in a little school out in the middle of nowhere near Madison, Wisconsin, Madison, South Dakota.
So
I finished up a year. It was the second semester, and the teacher had gotten sick, and so I finished up the year. And then I didn't have a job before she came back again. I finished second semester because she had to be out. And it was the worst winter in history, 36. No, I lived, you haven't read my article about a rookie teacher. We lived in a teacherage, and it was so cold, they had belly stove upstairs with corn cobs. And we went to bed. Now, you won't believe it. I had on my pajamas. I had a wool robe. I had slippers on my feet, crocheted, and a stocking cap on my head. And the crack in the window, there'd be snow on the bottom of the bed. And it was so cold for a while, we slept three in a bed to keep warm. And then no John out. I mean, the John was outside, and of course, big snow did. So we'd go to the bathroom in school, and then we wouldn't drink any water if we could help it. And the first thing in the morning, we went to the bathroom over at school because you couldn't.
Well, one more question here. What are your current thoughts about the quality and scope of education you received at UW?
I think I had a very good education. I think sometimes it maybe it wasn't as practical. I think we had an awful lot of science that I didn't use in home economics. And I think that they could have had some more practical things like what to do when the sewing machine doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the home ec department, when we came back, you know, for graduate students, they asked us that. What did we lack when we taught you? And the thing, my comment was how to fix the sewing machine, what to do when something goes wrong.
Okay, I'd like to thank you very much.
Oh, that's all right.
Time and cooperation. Is there anything you'd like to add? Anything else?
Well, the University of Wisconsin is very dear to my heart. And now it's not called home economics, and when I get the letters, I'm all mixed up because it's this and it's that. It isn't clear home economics anymore.
Well, I'd like to thank, I'll call you Miss Christensen to go by your school name. And I should point out that Miss Christensen, I wrote her week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that, 3 weeks ago. She lives in Mesa, Arizona, and lo and behold, she's here in Madison, Wisconsin today, so I feel most fortunate in having had this opportunity to hear you.